Okay, hopefully, hey, it works. That's good. Okay. Hi, and welcome to this session, straight after the keynote, which is always an interesting place to be. So this session is acronym soup, and it's actually to take you through a whole load of stuff in a little bit more detail that was in the inside of the keynote that you saw a few moments ago with Brad. My name is Simon May. I'm a principal program manager on Brad Anderson's team. So I'm one of the folks that helps to build the Microsoft Intune product. And we do that by working very differently. At the very end of Brad's session, he kind of started to explain that the world has changed from when we used to build this box product into this world where we're now engineering a service. And everything that you're going to see inside of EMS is a service. It's all running inside of Microsoft's cloud. All running on all of our data centers around the world. And it really does change the way that we actually build the product. For example, how many people in this room are actually on call for the services that they're running back inside of your own data centers? Okay, there's a few hands going up. I'm on call as well. I'm on call for Microsoft Intune. All of the program managers inside of the organization for Intune we'll get woken up anywhere between our shifts run from 2 a.m. till 2 p.m. because we're actually out there understanding what's happening with the service and using it in just the same way as you are with your internal services. It's really changed the way that we interact. A lot of what we do is actually coming out and speaking to folks who are starting to use these services so that we can make them better based on the feedback that you're giving us. And that feedback that we take in means that we will improve the product in the ways that you actually need it to be improved in order to make a better product. So that's a little bit about who I am and what I do. For the next hour, we're going to take a look through the acronym soup that is Enterprise Mobility and Security, or EMS, which is the first acronym. We're going to start to decompose some of these things. This kind of a session, though, there's only about 40 or so in the room. So if you've got questions, put your hand up. I'll repeat the question, and we can go through. And that's where we can get to some more of the depth than maybe we could have got to inside of the keynote. As Brad said, one of the things that is happening out there in the world, and customers have been telling us this for a long time, so we've started to build the products that you guys need in order to be able to respond to these things, is that the world is changing on a very, very rapid basis now. Inside of Intune, we actually release on a monthly basis. And over the course of the past year, we've actually released over 200 new product features, all to enable us to keep up with what's happening in the world today. You should all be able to see some threats or some challenges that you're seeing inside of your organization from this particular slide. How many folks think that they've had a data leak inside of their organization? Okay, there's one or two brave people that are putting their hands up, which is always good. How many people actually think that some of their user identities have been stolen? Okay, one or two. By the end of this session, you will be able to see, if you implement some of this stuff, all of the user identities that may have been stolen inside of your organization. We often get that at the end of this session. And the other thing that happens quite a lot is that people lose their devices. Anybody ever left their iPad in a hotel room? I have. I left my iPad in a hotel room in Washington, D.C. about a year ago. In fact, probably slightly more than that. It was when we were working on Windows 10, and I had product specs on my iPad for Windows 10 that was left in that hotel room. Luckily, I was able to remotely wipe my device thanks to being able to run that device on Microsoft Intune. So these are the kind of things that are happening in the world today. It's actually very, very rare to find any organization that hasn't had credentials leaked. It is the number one attack that is going on in the world today. You can just look in the news every week and you'll find that there are millions of leaked credentials up for sale on the internet. One of the things that we do occasionally when we actually have companies come to Redmond and sit down and we take them through what we call an executive briefing center, is we'll actually sit there and I'll be just having a conversation with the people around the table and I'll just go and search on the internet. We have a little tool that we'll go and search to see if any of the people in the room's credentials have ever been leaked. And
Bear in mind these are CISOs, CIOs, IT directors, those kind of folks. I've never done an EBC where I haven't been able to find their credentials on the internet. That's very, very scary. It's very, very worrying. And the leaks are massive. I mean, they're not just those sites that maybe people shouldn't be going to. Adobe had a very large leak. So there's a lot of corporate credentials got leaked in that particular information. If you were in that and your users haven't changed passwords yet, that's probably a big problem. Okay, so the first acronym that we actually came up with to help you here was Enterprise Mobility and Security. Actually, we used to call this Enterprise Mobility Suite up until a few months ago, and then we've actually renamed it to Enterprise Mobility and Security because security has become a very large part of what we do. We kind of think of enterprise mobility and security in these three pillars or buckets. The first one is identity-driven security. So Brad mentioned that we now think of identity as the new perimeter. Well, we really truly do. Protecting that identity is something that you really need to be thinking about. How many folks are Office 365 users? Okay, wow, I love that. Over the course of the past year, the amount of hands going up in the room just keeps going up for that particular question. Everybody in that group, you're already using Azure Active Directory. So if you are using that, by the end of this session, you could just turn on Azure Active Directory Premium, and you'd be able to take advantage of all of the stuff I'm going to show you. The next bucket is our application and device protections. So we want to make sure that people can use any device and any application, and it's going to remain secure. That means that I can take my iPad and I can run things like the Office apps that Brad showed us, but I can also have that exact same experience work on a Windows PC if I go to it. And I also have control over what's happening in the browser if I go to maybe my home PC. We also are, one of the reasons that I like our enterprise and mobility security solution so much is that I used to be an IT guy. I used to run an IT shop in the UK for one of the largest banks in the world. And I never got an increase in my IT budget over the 10 years that I was there running that IT department. I never got an increase in budget. So I have to have solutions which aren't going to make me compromise on what I'm going to be able to integrate with. They have to be completely integrated with what I've already got today. And that's one of the places I think that Enterprise Mobility and Security does a really amazing job. We can integrate with the identity system that everybody's using on premises, Active Directory. We can integrate with the devices that everybody's carrying in their pockets, their iPhones. We can integrate with all of the cloud applications that people want to be able to use. We can do integration with Salesforce, with Google Apps, if you're using that. Obviously, you guys aren't. You're using Office 365. We also, however, have made these solutions incredibly not only comprehensive with what you're already using on premises, but also with what you're using in the cloud. And so few people actually understand what that really means. When we start to think about engineering services, as I said earlier, you have to think about where the gaps are in between those services. So if you've got a productivity solution, and that productivity solution is talking to an identity solution, if there's any gaps in the middle, how do you go through the process of troubleshooting where those problems have come from? I can tell you from experience, being on call for these services, that actually that's really hard. We've had to take an engineering level approach to that. We've taken what's happening inside of Office 365 and what's happening inside of Enterprise Mobility and Security, and we've actually made identifiers, GUIDs in a sense, between those two services the same. Because previously they weren't. What we were finding is that when people were calling us up and saying they had a problem, we couldn't tie those two pieces of information together. We were in a position where we could make those GUIDs the same. So we did. Now take those two things apart. Say they're made by completely different vendors that have no knowledge of each other. How are you going to be able to tie those pieces of information together in order to be able to troubleshoot a problem? It starts to become incredibly difficult. And that's one of the reasons why we think that enterprise mobility and security is very comprehensive. It integrates with what you've got already, it integrates with everything you're going to, and because it's all coming from one vendor, it actually is all together. Now you might be thinking, why? Well, that's okay. Microsoft says that they can do everything. We like the idea of being able to partner with other people. Well, we actually do that as well. we're very open these days, and we've partnered with a company called Lookout. Lookout was the company that found the Trident vulnerability on iOS. And one of the things that we've done is built some unique integrations with them where they've also got this cloud service, and this cloud service that Lookout runs talks to a Lookout client on every device. That client is telling us information about if that device is running any malware, or rather it's telling their cloud service that. They have synchronized their GUIDs with our GUIDs. So we now know that when a device is managed by Intune and a device is managed by Lookout, that information is the same information about the same device, so we can tie those two pieces of information together. So that's what we mean by comprehensive. It works really well with what you've got today, works really well with everything you're buying from one vendor, and it's extensible to work with other vendors as well. But I'm going to spend the next part of this time actually drilling into the acronyms that actually form all of this stuff, because Microsoft loves its acronyms. So the very first thing I want to talk about is AAD, Azure Active Directory. We never really refer to it by Azure Active Directory. We always call it Azure AD. We like to take an acronym, lengthen it, and shorten it at will. So what is Azure Active Directory? Well, we think about it as the foundation for enterprise mobility. Little bit of the backstory here. Everybody's been using Active Directory on premises for quite a long time. When I say everybody, I mean you can almost count the number of companies in the world that don't use Active Directory. They include Apple and Google and IBM, all of whom have their own directory infrastructures. But that on-premises system, we thought, okay, how do we make that more cloud aware? And we honestly tried to take it into the cloud, just literally move domain controllers, put them into a cloud and see if they worked, and it just didn't. It didn't scale. Anybody have a rough idea of how many users we actually have inside of Azure Active Directory today? 750 million active users are using Azure Active Directory. Azure Active Directory deals with billions of authentications every single week. In fact, this number changes so often it's hard to know, but I think at the moment we're dealing with about 18 billion authentications inside of Azure AD every single week. If we had just picked up and lift and shifted on-premises AD into the cloud, it couldn't have coped. So we had to go back to the drawing board and build an entirely new approach to the way that we would do directories in the cloud. But we wanted to make sure that this was going to work incredibly well with what you had on-premises. One of the things that changed in the world quite kind of notably was that we didn't just do, when we did this lift and shift of the directory into the cloud, alongside of that, there was this big shift going on from whereabouts software is being delivered to you from. On-premises was the way that this happened for a very long time, but now most software, pretty much, is delivered as a service from the cloud. You can think of that from, for example, Dynamics CRM or Salesforce or Office 365 and Google Apps or Google Work, I think it now is. Or you could think of it as Adobe Creative Suite. Because these things have all moved to the cloud, they've become harder to deal with. If they're connecting back to an on-premises directory in order to be able to do authentication, you're just starting to break the model that that service was designed to work in. So as we were building Azure Active Directory, we made it really, really good at working with third-party applications. In fact, out-of-the-box integration with third-party applications is pretty fantastic. We integrate with, and again, this number changes very regularly as well, we integrate with about 2,500 different applications to be able to do seamless single sign-on directly from the cloud. That means that for your users, they could sign into Windows with the same username as password as they sign into Office 365, as they sign into Salesforce. And you don't have to go through all this process of setting up painful mechanisms in order to be able to provide that single sign-on. You can just use password vaulting, if that's going to work, where you store the username and a rolling password inside of Azure AD. And Azure AD will keep it rolling so that the user never needs to know the actual password for the service. They only ever know their Azure AD credentials. As we were working through this as well, we started to notice that customers needed a good way of being able to take their on-premises identity and synchronize it with what's happened in the cloud. Now, if you've been on Office 365 for a long time, you'll know that we have something called DirSync. Is anybody using DirSync? Okay, if you actually are using DirSync, you probably want to plan to get off of DirSync because it's being deprecated in favor of Azure Active Directory Connect. Now, Azure AD Connect was born out of what we learned from DirSync, but made a lot more scalable. So Azure AD Connect actually sits on-premises just like DirSync did, talks to your on-premises directory just like DirSync did, but it now also provides not only that synchronization capability and the reverse synchronization capability, being able to take changes in passwords and changes in group membership from Azure AD back to your on-premises directory, but it also allows you to be able to understand the health of your on-premises directory, your synchronization environment, and potentially a federation environment as well, all through deploying one piece of on-premises software. And we can show you that inside of the console. The reason that we did all of this investment, though, was to be able to get to a world where single sign-on can be very realistic for people. At Microsoft, we have single sign-on. There is only one, I only have one Microsoft username and password. I don't have to have a Microsoft username and password to be able to access my HR system and another system to access Office 365 and another password to be able to access something else. It's all single sign-on. I've never come across another organization on earth that has been able to get to single sign-on across every application. But I think the best possible way of getting there is with Azure Active Directory. Obviously, the thing about single sign-on is that makes it so good is that actually having one password means that the user is much less likely to do silly things with their password, such as write them down on a post-it note underneath their keyboard, which I'll guarantee you, if you go back to the office and you go turning over all of the keyboards, you will find somebody that's written their username and password down underneath their keyboard. It's very, very common. So we think that identity has become the core of everybody's business. It enables you to have access to those thousands of applications. It enables you to be able to manage scale with those identities. We can literally manage thousands of identities, tens of thousands of identities inside of Azure AD. We can deal with billions of authentications every single week. We think that it provides you with an approach which is going to be holistic, identity-driven, innovative, and intelligent. And I think the most important thing to actually land there is the intelligent part. The information that Brad showed you going into that security graph in the keynote really is just the start. Everything that we're able to draw together is completely unique. Nobody else in the world can do this kind of gathering of intelligence around identity. There are probably only three identity providers that can do anything similar: Google, Facebook, and Microsoft. But Microsoft is the only one that can do this for individual organizations. Facebook and Google are struggling in this space at the moment. The intelligent security graph is intelligent because it's bringing together information not just from your organizational sign-ons, but from other places where the identity is used. One of the things that we actually do is we go out there and we get all of the leaked passwords on the internet. What essentially happens there is that the hackers steal the passwords and they generally put them up for sale on the internet inside of these things called paste bins. They are just lists of usernames and passwords. We go and get those. And then we put them into the security graph. And if one of your users is on one of those password lists, we let you know. That's how we do the leaked credentials detection. What we aren't going to do with that information is tell you which leaked password list they were on, because some of those leaked password lists could be construed as being a little bit kind of difficult from a user privacy point of view. But we will tell you that your users have had their credentials leaked. We can also tell you if your users' credentials have been leaked in attacks which look similar to an attack which is going on today. So one of the things that we actually do, one of the advantages of having the one of the most hacked networks in the world is that we can actually start to identify patterns. So for example, when we see corporate identities being used to try and access Xbox Live, for a start, we think that there's something strange going on there. But what we then do is we start to see this pattern of passwords being used against the service. And believe it or not, that means that we can then even go as far as being able to say that particular machine that those set of passwords were coming from is actually not just being used to attack with this set of corporate credentials, but it's also showing up as being this same as this other machine that's running in this other place from this other IP range. Oh, hang on, those two password groups look the same. And then we start to work out that actually those two machines are appearing as part of the same botnet. And then we're able to say your organization's credentials have actually not just been compromised, but a botnet is attempting to use those username and password connections in order to access services which are nothing to do with your organization. That's the kind of level of intelligence that we can apply over the entire graph. We kind of think about this as being one of these controls for protecting at the front door. Brad showed you the multi-factor authentication in the keynote at the beginning of the day. But multi-factor authentication is just one of those conditions on which we'll allow access or disallow access. We actually have this idea of conditional access. And conditional access is one of these pieces which has been engineered inside of the fabric of Microsoft, in essence, to make it so that we can tie these pieces of information together and act upon them. So, for example, my phone is known to Microsoft. So if I access Microsoft's resources from my phone, there's a pretty good chance I'm going to be allowed access. If I do it from this iPad, which I've never signed into before, then I'm actually going to see a multi-factor authentication on this particular device because it's not registered. If I take this phone and I get on a plane and fly from Redmond to Stockholm, what's going to happen? It's a known device, but it's now in an unknown location. In that case, we're going to prompt me for a multi-factor authentication to get through with a known device because we've never seen it sign on from Stockholm before. We're able to tie those pieces of information together right at the front door and determine whether somebody should have access based on that particular type of information or whether we should block access. And we can do that to anything which is connected to Azure Active Directory. So I'm going to just flip out of the slides for a second. And I'm going to go into a duplicated screen. There we go. This is the Azure console. So from here, a few different things that I can do. I actually have identity protection just down at the bottom here. We're going to go in there in a second. And then we have mobile application management up here, which we'll go into a little later. I'm just going to go for a start into my users and groups. Now, this is the preview of Azure AD inside of the new Azure console. Is anybody using Azure AD today? All of the Office 365 people are. Anybody actually administering through the Azure console? Okay, one or two. Most people probably do your admin through the Office 365 console. Yeah, okay. So here's the kind of interesting thing about this. All of these consoles, they're all using the same API. Behind all these consoles is something called the Microsoft Graph. And the Microsoft Graph allows us to be able to interact with anything across the Microsoft services from a standard API. So this particular chart just here is being rendered from information from the Microsoft Graph. What does that mean? Well, it's actually going in and it's getting some information from Azure Active Directory, but it could also be pulling information from Office 365. It's all accessible through this one API. And that means that we can tie one console that looks like this to a console that looks completely different. You can do the same admin task in two places, and it is the same admin task. It also means we can bring out PowerShell, and PowerShell can be used to do that same admin task. Or you can actually, as a developer, use the same API in order to be able to do that same admin task against the exact same information inside of the graph. So you get just one single source of the truth, the graph, but represented in ways that are very useful to the individual that's doing the admin. So in this case, I'm an admin going through the new Azure portal, and I can go do things like create groups. So here inside of my my directory, you can see all of my directories which have been synced up. You can see some where they're synced in the case of engineering. That was a bad place to click. You can see some where they are created in the cloud, which are assigned. And you can also see this some groups like MVA group just here, which are dynamic. I'm actually going to go just create one of these, because this is a kind of a cool thing that we can do inside of Azure AD. I'm going to just give this a name, call it new group. This is a new group. So we have these, the ability to use these three different types of groups now inside of Azure AD. The first one is assigned. So here I can just take some people and put them into that group. The next one is dynamic user. Now, dynamic user groups are actually based on queries. So I can go into add a dynamic query. I'm going to select a simple rule in this case. And what I can say is, let's take one of my bits of information here. Let's take department. So what I've just done is I've just created, by doing that, a group which will be everybody that's based inside of the marketing department based on the department attribute from Active Directory. So what does that mean? Well, now when anybody changes that user's department attribute, they're automatically going to have their group memberships updated. This is cool because when people move around in organizations, which they tend to do, they move from, say, sales to marketing, or from IT to finance, or from other departments around, they're automatically going to see these roles apply to them. So imagine that you have this taken to the next level. You say that everybody inside of the marketing group is only allowed to access these five applications. Well, they'll now only have access to those five applications. If they move from marketing to sales, suddenly they get six applications in sales. Great. Somebody moves from sales with their six applications back into marketing, they automatically get collapsed down and you deprovision that user ID for that sixth application. Everybody with me? Okay. So you're starting to be able to make things dynamic. We can then actually create advanced rules as well. Let's go back here. Okay. Now, I can actually start to write queries in a query language around what's happening in my directory. So I could now say, let's take people that are inside of the marketing department, but that marketing department is in, I don't know, is in Sweden. Those people are allowed access to the Swedish HR system, so they can manage their benefits in Sweden. But the people that are in marketing that are in the UK can access the UK HR system, so they can access the UK benefits. You can start to see where being able to combine these together provides some real power. Okay, that's dynamic groups. Step all the way back to there. One of the things that we added last week as well, by very popular demand, and I really do mean last week, is that we added sign-in and audit logging. So we've been able to do intelligent things with the logging for quite a while, but now we actually log every single success and failure event inside of Azure AD. So now you can see here, for example, that I had a sign-on failure, and it'll load up some extra information for me. There we go. So Clay actually had a sign-on failure when he was trying to sign in from Firefox, and his sign-in status was failure, obviously. He was signing in from Zurich. I don't remember Clay ever traveling to Zurich. That's kind of strange. And he was trying to sign on at 9:57 a.m. yesterday. That's odd information. Okay, quite strange. But now I'm starting to pull the information together into one place. I also have the ability to do audit logging, where I'm tracking all of the tasks that the admin is doing. So audit logging is going to tell you when somebody assigns a mailbox to somebody inside of Office 365, because it's all coming back from the Microsoft graph. Okay, let's go into identity protection. Brad showed some of this in the keynote, but I want to just explain this a little bit more. We essentially have different levels of risk inside of Azure Active Directory that we're pulling out for you here. So let's go say, let's go for our users flagged for risk. So I've obviously done some very risky things. You can see that I've had 17 risk events here for my sign-in. Let's scroll down. You can see that I've been signing on from lots of anonymous IP addresses. So as Brad showed you in the demo, in the keynote, the Tor network is the easiest place to do anything where you want to sign on from an anonymous IP address. One of the most interesting things that I've heard about the Tor network recently is that FireEye, who are a CASB producer, actually did a survey, and they found that 94% of network traffic coming from the Tor network was malicious, which is pretty staggering. You might want to have a problem with people connecting from your network from Tor. In fact, actually, we block Tor inside of Microsoft in certain places, and you have to have an exception to be able to use it. I'm not saying that Tor is bad, by the way. There are lots of very legitimate uses for Tor. But the fact that 94% of the logons that are coming from Tor are malicious, that should definitely be causing some cause for concern. You can also see that we get sign-ons from an unfamiliar location. Now, if I actually have a look at this, this is going to be very interesting because I've never been lucky enough to travel to St. Kitts and St. Nevis. It's a very nice place. I believe it's particularly warm at this time of year. But I've never been there, but my sign-on's been used from that particular location. Again, it's one of those factors which is be telling the IT department that there is a risk associated with this user. Let's go have a look at, let's close these down, go have a look at some of the other details. Alice here has actually been remediated. She had some previous risk events, but in this case, I've just gone and said, this user, we're now going to dismiss this, because there might be times when there is a need to do that. For example, if somebody's credentials have been leaked, we're going to tell you that continuously. So you want to change that after somebody's been had the ability to update their password. Okay, let's have a look at other things that we have going on in here. So particularly risky events. So this is going to tell you if you've got lots of users that are trying to get to you from anonymized networks, for example. So in this case, you can see that actually I have quite a lot of anonymized networks trying to get to my corporate locations, possibly a cause for concern. I also have quite a few sign-ins from places which are unfamiliar. So users are doing a lot of travel, is essentially what that's telling me. What about vulnerabilities? Well, in this case, it's actually telling me that 39 of my users haven't yet bothered to verify themselves with multi-factor authentication, meaning that there's 39 people out there who the only option I've got is to block their access. I can't put an extra level of protection in place before they get access to my corporate network. Let's go and have a quick look at the policy. I think Brad showed this policy inside of the keynote, but let's just walk you through this in a little more detail. What we're saying here is that any of these users that are inside of this protected users group will, if they have a medium or above risk, literally medium or above, will be required to change their password. So what we're saying there is if a user's coming in from, actually it's not going to be coming in from, if a user has had something that means that the user is categorized as medium risk, then we're going to require that they have to go through a password change. And something that requires that they have a medium risk could be that we're starting to see their account used from lots of locations, or it could mean that the user has had their password leaked. We then, before we get to apply anything inside of here, and I love this, as somebody who used to run a help desk, this is fantastic, frankly, I can get to see how many people I'm going to impact by putting a policy in place. So this means that before I put my policy in place, your IT security people can call the person managing the help desk and tell them to put on an extra shift because they've just required that the entire organization now has to register for multi-factor authentication. There's somebody smiling down there, which means that they've obviously had that happen to them. Okay, having done that, I keep closing too far back, I can apply that policy, and now those users are going to be required to sign in with certain requirements. I can also set a sign-in risk policy. So think of this as session risk. So when somebody starts a session up with us, if they're inside of these groups, if they're inside of all users, and I also have selected an exclude group here as well, and I've excluded my administrators. If they are medium or above, meaning that they're coming from a network which is unknown or they've had their password leaked, then I'm going to require that they're going to go through multi-factor authentication. And that's going to give me exactly the event, exactly the same set of circumstances that you saw in the keynote demo that Brad did with the Tor browser. And again, before I turn the policy on, it's going to tell me how many people I'm going to start challenging and how many people I'm going to start blocking inside of my organization. And then one of the things that I like, just to make things really nice, you can get a weekly digest emailed to you so you don't have to keep coming back into the console to tell you how many accounts are getting attacked on a weekly basis. For everybody that's using Office 365, if you just go back, enable Azure Active Directory Premium trial licensing, you can start to do that today. And you'll start to understand how many of these risky events you're seeing inside of your network. And if you use the trial, it's not going to cost you anything to do that.
Question.
Yeah. If you what the user? Okay, so if the user's credentials get leaked after you have remediated the user, then they will go from, so it's all going to depend on the date and time at which you remediate the user. If you, assuming that you've got a timeline running this way, if you find that the user's got credentials leaked here, you remediate here, and then there's another credential leak here, it will actually flag them again here. So you'll get flagged up again if there's a second leak of their credentials. So the other thing that we have to start thinking about is how you protect against user mistakes as well. And users are going to make mistakes. They're going to do that on a very regular basis. Firstly, you want to be able to go out there and say, hey, how many people inside of my organization have leaked their credentials and how many people have started to use applications that we didn't actually allow them to use? That's always an interesting one. When Brad showed you the cloud app security dashboard inside of the keynote, one of the things that it showed was that there was 152 apps that were being used inside of the organization. That's a really interesting number. So where that's coming from is good to know. The Microsoft Cloud App Security tool actually has connectors which will talk to your network infrastructure. So if you're using, I don't know, Cisco devices on the edge of your network, it's going to talk to those devices, go through the audit logs, and see what sites people are going to. So what we typically see here is that when people turn Cloud App Security on, and it's super simple to turn Cloud App Security on, you will actually start to see apps that are being used inside of your organization that you didn't know existed. And you don't just see one or two. You start seeing hundreds. In fact, the average is 300. 300 apps that you had no idea were being used inside of your organization. Why is that? Well, honestly, lots of organizations haven't yet embraced the fact that their users might want to share files on things like SlideShare. So they take a PowerPoint presentation, they upload it to SlideShare. Cloud App Security is going to tell you that that was something that your users did. Could that be a problem for you? Well, it could be if there was secret information inside of the PowerPoints that they were sharing. It's also going to tell you if they've saved something to their personal OneDrive account or their personal Box account or their personal Google account. So it's going to help you with those kind of shadow IT discoveries where people are doing things that maybe they're not supposed to do. We also have, and I'll come to these a little later, the ability to prevent data leakage from mobile apps. And not only that, all of the creation of these labels that we've set up will actually work with your on-premises environment as well. If you're not in a position to be able to use Cloud App Security yet, we've also developed the same, well, not quite the same, similar techniques for being able to protect on-premises resources with ATA, or Azure Threat, Advanced Threat Analytics. So we can now detect everywhere, basically. Okay. I was going to do a demo of Cloud App Security at this point. Unfortunately, my manager stole my demo 2 hours ago and used it for the keynote. So unless you want to see the exact same thing again, I'm going to save us a few minutes and skip over that. Yeah. That's an interesting question. So probably the most broad definition possible. Any website where the user is storing information is essentially what we're thinking about. So that storage could be uploading files. It could be that they are signing into it with their credentials, anything like that at all. It's not going to be just mobile apps. It's also going to be websites where they're storing information. Not only executables, no. Okay. So the next section here is our managed mobile productivity. Brad showed you this from the user side earlier on, but I'm going to show you it from the administrator side here. We've built some really quite clever mobility management solutions for any types of device. The reason that we've done so well, and the reason that we are doing so well, is because we've taken what people really want to be able to use and made it safer by applying enterprise mobility and security over the top of it. So those folks that have got Office 365, have you got E3 licenses? E3 licenses? Okay, yeah. Okay, most people have got E3 licenses. The E3 licenses allow you to legally use the Office mobile apps on iOS, Android, and Windows, and Windows Phone. On iOS and Android, we've built in this thing called the Intune App SDK, which allows us to manage what's happening inside of those applications. We're the only manufacturer of any applications that has actually built something end-to-end like this, with applications that people really want to use. And I'll give you an example of why it's applications that people really want to use. Brad showed two applications, Word and Outlook, inside of the keynote. The Outlook application today is considered to be the best Gmail application in the world by The Verge, which is always kind of funny. But it also has millions of downloads, is in the Apple App Store, considered to be essential. It has the Essentials label on it. It also has something like 20,000 four-star reviews, which is incredible. People really like that application. Word has 35,000 four-star reviews. That's very, very, very good. That means that people are really using and like those applications. The other platforms that are out there for MDM, they're not getting 20,000 four-star reviews for their the usability of their applications. They're getting, in the case of one of the other folks that does this, 900 two-star reviews, one of which says, and one of the verbatim reviews actually says, I would like to fire the people in my IT department for making me use this email client. That's how bad these things can get. We don't have that problem. We have these amazing applications. They're incredibly rich. And we're doing very cool things with those productivity experiences all the time. The Outlook application, for example. We actually all use Outlook on our Android devices, as Brad mentioned, or our iOS devices. As Brad mentioned, we actually have policy in place which requires us to use applications that require multi-factor authentication. Well, guess what? On iOS, the built-in mail client doesn't use multi-factor authentication. So there I've got an immediate security need, an IT need, for me to not be using the built-in application, but to be using Outlook. So what's the user need to use Outlook? Well, internally, we use Skype for Business for all of our internal meetings. And I'll give you an example of how often that happens. In Redmond, Microsoft employs 60,000 people. We have 192 buildings. Yes, it gets a little bit crazy. In order to be able to make a meeting sometimes, you need at least 30 minutes to get between buildings. So what happens? Even when we're in the same location, we end up having Skype conference calls because it's so much easier. I can create, join a Skype conference call from my phone inside of Outlook. I don't have to use two different applications. I don't have to switch. It's just natural. I can just say, I want this to be a Skype meeting. All the details are put into the email invite, immediately. That's one of the ways that it's really good for me as a user, and it still stays secure as IT. One of the things that we've done inside of those applications to do that is the ability to keep the data from personal and work completely separate. And my Outlook on my phone, I have my personal Outlook.com email. I also have my corporate Microsoft.com email. I can't copy and paste between those two things, just as Brad showed inside of the keynote. That stops me from accidentally leaking data inside of the organization. It also stops me from accidentally copying data from my Microsoft email into my Twitter application and tweeting the latest results from Microsoft before they get published through financial analysts. It allows me to have that kind of guided experience. Say Microsoft decided to fire me. They could just remote wipe just my Microsoft.com email and leave my Outlook.com email intact on my device. Not only that, they can do that in the case when my device itself isn't managed by Microsoft. This is not a Microsoft MDM managed device. But yet they can wipe my corporate email because of the way that we've built our mobile application management to work. I actually have a session tomorrow where I'll go into a lot more depth on that. It's a level 400 session, and I'll take you inside it all. So we have the ability to protect that data as well, wherever it goes. With or without enrollment, the data is going to be encrypted on iOS and Android. We can make it so that if I share that data to anybody, we're automatically going to provide provide rights management encryption over that information. And we can do that by enabling this idea of classification. Inside of Brad's demo, he actually showed going in and selecting and saying, hey, we're going to make this secret for the finance organization only. And it put a big watermark across the screen. What he didn't show you was that I could actually turn around and say, actually, just because IT put some kind of controls in place that detected that I used the word secret inside of that, it shouldn't really have been categorized as secret. That was really a secret because I was planning a secret party for my daughter. Okay. I have the ability to override those controls in an audited way. So I can override, but the information is going to be audited and passed back to IT. So in that case, I'm going to get a pop-up that says, why are you overriding this? And I'm just going to type, I'm planning a party for my daughter. And that information is going to be kept for my audit logs. Okay, I'm going to show you the man without enrollment experience, but because Brad showed you the user experience side of that, I'm going to show you the admin side of it now. So I'm just going to switch back to my Azure portal here. And we're moving all of Microsoft Intune into the Azure portal. And that work has begun with our mobile application management capability set. So here you can see that I've actually got some users already deployed with my mobile application management policies, but I'm going to walk you through these policies quickly. Firstly, let's go and take a quick look at my app policies. Let's try the iOS policy first. So here, I'll drill all the way into my policy information, policy settings. Okay, so here what you can see is the capabilities that we're going to apply to any app which is managed by this policy. In this case, we're going to say that this app can't be backed up to iTunes or iCloud. We can't transfer data to any apps which aren't managed by this policy. We aren't going to allow save as inside of the application. We are going to restrict cut, copy, and paste. We're going to require that the device is locked. We're not going to enable contacts to be synchronized. We're going to disable printing from this application. We are going to have a PIN on the application that's going to require this PIN to be of a certain length. I'm not going to allow simple PINs like 1, 2, 3, 4. And then at the bottom here, we can say that the data can only live on the device for a maximum period of time before that device checks in again with our service. Meaning, if I lose the device, well, actually, this is a really good example. I quite like this one. If I wanted to steal your device, the very first thing that I would do with it is take out the SIM card. The next thing that I would do with it is make sure that I take it to a location where there's no Wi-Fi that it's going to have known. And now I've got an unlimited length of time to be able to steal data off of your device. However, this will stop that. What we're literally saying here is that if the device has been offline for 90 days, we will wipe that data automatically. I can easily just set that down to 1. So now I have a policy where any attacker has a maximum of 1 day to be able to access the data on that device. I obviously am able to move that up and down so that I can actually have a period of time where I'm allowed to do things that a regular user would do, like get on an aeroplane and still use the information on their device. That policy can be set for any application that is supported. And in terms of supported applications, we have quite a few. All of the Office suite of apps, things like Power BI, let's tick that, Yammer, the SharePoint apps, Remote Desktop, Skype for Business, Outlook Groups, Dynamics, are all built directly with the SDK inside of them, meaning that every single version of that that's downloaded from the Apple iTunes Store, or from, sorry, the Apple App Store, or from the Google Play Store, is going to come with these protections built in. There is no way for anybody to take those protections out or to circumvent them. They're always going to get the protections if you've set this policy for those applications. We can then apply that to the specific groups of users that we want to target it to. We can also go back a little bit here. We can add our own line of business apps. So you can take your own internal applications, build in the Intune app SDK, or wrap the app with the Intune app SDK. And then you'll be able to provide exactly the same level of controls over your own applications. I haven't added any in there. I can also, from here, go send a wipe request. And you'll see that I've sent out wipe requests to a number of my applications on an iPad that I'd lost so that I could remotely wipe it. And then I can set this thing called a conditional access policy. Mentioned those already. But what this is going to say is that the only apps that are allowed to access my services are these ones that are protected by an Intune app SDK, meaning that nobody is going to be, once I've set this policy, nobody will be allowed to access my services unless they're using an app which I can provide policy to. It's a very, very powerful set of capabilities to have built directly into all of those Office apps, which users are telling us they really want to be able to use. Okay, let's talk again a little bit more about the comprehensive solution that we've put in place here. We really have done a lot of work to make this so that anybody can come along and work with us on this solution. Of the 2,500 plus applications in the Azure AD gallery, probably 98, 99% of those are not Microsoft applications, because the Microsoft ones are just done. The rest are just ready for people to be able to use. You can also obviously implement the same thing with your own applications as well. In terms of with Microsoft Intune, well, there we've integrated with people like Lookout in order to be able to leverage their capabilities. But how many people are using Cisco devices inside of their organization? Something like Cisco ISE. Cisco ISE understands conditional access. Cisco ISE can actually know that a device is managed by Intune before allowing it onto your Wi-Fi network or before allowing it access to the VPN connections. Who's using Citrix NetScalers? We're making it so that Citrix NetScalers understand conditional access. That's really powerful, because that's actually going to mean that your Citrix NetScalers can become your only edge device. And yet, when a device is registered with Intune, with Azure Active Directory, the NetScaler is going to know to allow or disallow access to resources inside of your organization based on that information. We're working with a bunch of other partners to do very, very similar types of integrations as well. Who uses TeamViewer in order to be able to manage some of their PCs? We integrate with TeamViewer. We've made it so that TeamViewer PCs can be so that PCs that are managed with Microsoft Intune can be managed with TeamViewer for remote access. We've built an architecture which is flexible, and from your point of view, it just works. I can tell you that it really does just work. We have virtually no outages whatsoever that affect every single customer. Obviously, there's going to be occasional outages that affect one customer, but this is where this changes from the old world of building box product software. When you made, everybody can probably remember this, when you deployed a piece of Microsoft software and you deployed that on-premises server, what happened when something went wrong? Pick up the phone, you call Microsoft support. What happened when you were the first people to discover that problem? I did that a few times. I called Microsoft support. I said, hey, we've got this problem. They went, never heard of that. We need to create a hot fix for that. And it'll be about 6 weeks while we get that done for you. Just live with the issue in the meantime. That doesn't happen anymore. Because what happens when you call support and when we actually see that there's an incident that's affecting you, we'll call the people that built the product. I get woken up in the middle of the night. But it's not just me. It's the software engineers as well. So the person that's actually fixing your software for you is the person who wrote the original code, which is a nice experience to have. They can go directly to the lines of code that they know are going to be causing the problem, and then they can write a hotfix that we can then apply to the scale unit that your tenant is deployed to at that time. So we'll fix it for you immediately. We then hold that fix inside of the branch for the next release, and then when we release that next branch release to the entirety of the customer base, which is maximum another 3 weeks away, everybody gets to get the update. The way that you can get hold of Enterprise Mobility and Security is probably one of the ultimate pieces of acronym soup, frankly. This is where it all starts to come together. So you can either buy something called EMS as an E3 or an E5 subscription. There are no E1 and E2 subscriptions, so don't worry about those. We've just done this so that they look exactly the same as the Office subscriptions that go alongside them. This slide, which you'll be able to download afterwards, gives you like a little breakdown of where these things fit. We are working on what the managed mobile productivity piece of E5 would look like, but we aren't there yet. You can also then take EMS and actually bundle it. You can consider the EMS is like the happy meal of all of this software. It's all been brought together for you. And then this next thing called Secure Productive Enterprise, or SPE, is like the super happy meal, which has some extra stuff in it. But if you're an Office 365 customer and you use Windows and you want to use EMS, this is by far the most cost-effective way to buy it. And not only that, we are seeing more sales of this particular licensing than we are of anything else now, because it actually is just an absolute bargain. What you will get for a Secure Productive Enterprise is your Office 365 E3 licenses, Windows 10 Enterprise licenses for 5 devices for 1 user, and you get Enterprise Mobility and Security E3 licensing all bundled together. And then you can actually upload both of those to Office 365 and EMS E5 if you want to as well. Okay, so in order to try and give you all of these acronyms in one really nice, easy to digest format, I turned it all into the periodic table of acronyms for Enterprise Mobility and Security. There's a lot of acronyms in what we do, but there shouldn't be any reason to get stuck on them at all. They are very, very easy to walk through and understand. Essentially, you have Secure Productive Enterprise, which is the best way to buy Office 365, Windows, and EMS. You can buy EMS just on its own. You can also buy Azure Active Directory Premium just on its own. And you can buy Intune on its own and Azure Information Protection on its own. And then the next level down is where you start to not be able to buy things separately. So you have to be able to go and buy Azure Active Directory, Identity Protection, Conditional Access, all as part of Azure Active Directory Premium. You have to buy MDM and MAM as part of Intune. You have to buy RMS and Classify Label and Protection as part of Azure Information Protection. Hopefully that's deconstructed a lot of the acronyms and given you a little bit of insight into what it is that we're doing inside of the product. But feel free to ask me any questions. You can come up at the end if you're feeling a little bit shy, or you can ask questions now if you have any of those. And I want to leave you with just this one last thing. The three steps that we think make sense for identity-driven security. Firstly, protect at the front door. Have protections in place that hopefully will stop some of those intruders. Secondly, protect against the user mistakes that might accidentally happen when people accidentally leak data. And thirdly, have some things in place that allow you to detect attacks before they start causing any damage inside of your environment. Okay, any questions? Yeah. Do all Microsoft mobile applications work with MFA? The answer is yes. Pretty much they do. I'm not aware of any that we don't do. And the reason for that is that multi-factor authentication is actually built into the authentication workflow for Azure AD. So we built this identity workflow called ADAL. And ADAL, the Azure Active Directory Application Library, allows you to build the authentication workflow against Azure AD, and it's going to automatically take into account anything like conditional access or multi-factor authentication as part of the workflow. That's also how we're able to get to apps that work without needing the device to be enrolled, because the authentication workflow is where the policy is coming from for those applications. Okay, we'll call it an end. Thank you very much.